easy being a fish. They think we just swim around all day enjoying the scenery.
Yeah, they certainly don't know how hard it is to survive all the nasty stuff they toss down their storm drains.
You're telling me. Yesterday, I had to swim my fin off just to try and dodge some motor oil.
I hear you. This morning, it was fertilizer. Nothing quite as fun as starting off the day trying to outswim the green monster.
What the fish are trying to say is not everyone understands that stormwater does not get treated. When it rains, the pollutants on our streets flow directly into our streams and rivers and can have adverse effects on plants, animals, drinking water, and yes, even fish. To learn more, call Reading Municipal Utilities at 224-6068. 224-6068.
Incoming! Not the car washing signs!
When it rains, it drains. Learn how you can protect our waterways and streams. Call 224-6068. 224-6068.
See you at the lake.
And the following is an encore presentation of We the People, which originally aired on December 7th of last year. Stay tuned and enjoy this Best of We the People with Aaron Ryan and Bill Cundiff here on AM 1460 KCNR.
The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Afternoon. I almost said good morning. Good afternoon. You're rejoining We the People Radio here at KCNR in our new time slot from noon to 2 every Sunday. You can also check up with us on the web, wethepeopleradio.us, and that site has been reconfigured, we'll call it, and still have all the great archives and all that, but I can add things a little quicker. You've got contact for, this is Aaron, and...
This is Bill.
Like, and he's typing. I'm not sure if he can talk and type.
Hey, and, wait a minute.
I know. So you have contact for both of us, and so we're privately sponsored and kind of cutting our own trail here.
Yeah, exciting.
Bob, good to have you. We had to have it on Sunday so we could have Bob. That was the whole plan.
That's great to have you guys back.
Keep the team alive. So,
hey, we're excited to be here.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, as per usual, we will zoom right to our guests because we have two great guests for us today. On, I don't know, similar, but I guess you could say the topics are similar because they're wide global and national politics, global really. One is Ambassador Francis Rooney. He is on with us the first hour, discussing his article in Time magazine, which is linked up on the website, with the visit of Pope Francis to Turkey, testing the Vatican on Islam. And tell you what, I think anybody who's paying attention to global politics knows that we can use all the help we can get.
Wall Street Journal did a great story on that, too, which was pretty darn interesting.
So we have the ambassador in there with us, yes?
Yes.
Ambassador Rooney. Hello. Welcome back.
Hi, Aaron. Thank you for having me back on.
Absolutely. Now you get to come on with us, you know, 3 o'clock. It's like we're an afternoon show now. You know, we don't have to get up at the crack of dawn. And, well, obviously you could have lunch and hang out and take a nap and then call.
I'm sure he has time for naps.
I don't know. Naps kill me, but apparently they're very popular. So talk to us a little. What's going on with them? We haven't been following necessarily the travels of the Pope closely, but this affects everybody who notices that the Islamic State is, I don't know, can't say they're taking over the world because they haven't gotten that big yet, but it's a big mess.
Well, I think the Pope's continued to raise the dialogue, as did Pope Benedict, in opposing the radical extremists, whether they're Al-Qaeda or ISIS. And, you know, he's spoken 3 times now about the possible application of the just war theory. He has done 2 trips now, Turkey and Albania, which highlight where areas where Muslims and Christians cooperate. And I think he's, deploying that soft power of the Holy See in a very productive way.
See, and that's the beauty of the deal. If he's willing to weigh in, I mean, obviously, there have been huge atrocities committed against Christians over the last, well, I mean, for a long time. But recently, we hear about that a lot. Does he get to actually say anything about that, or is that sort of...
No, he had. And in fact, in Turkey, he said that the ISIS criminality is a profound sin against God, which is, for him, about the strongest thing he could say, you know. And he got good press coverage for it, and I hope a lot of people pay attention to that. I mean, you know, it started with the Sunnis versus the Shiites, and now it's kind of metastasized into Sunnis versus Sunnis with ISIS and Al-Qaeda and all that. And the losers in the whole thing are the Christians.
What do you think? Do you think Americans are following that fairly closely? I know the rest of the world does.
You know, I think it's very complicated for Americans. I think the whole Iraq invasion was very complicated for Americans because we don't think in terms of things like a Sunni-Shiite schism that is so profound that they could hate each other worse than they even hate us. It's difficult for the Western mind to comprehend some of those kinds of things that, happened in the East, in the Oriental mind. And also, I don't think we know enough about their doctrines and their dogmas, you know, the people at large.
Sure. No, I would agree with that. It's interesting because I was at a Pearl Harbor event this morning. I don't know what we call it, a commemoration. And, you know, I had several people. I said, well, you know, I had this meeting afterward, and I said, you know, I really need to go. He said, we're interviewing the ambassador, the man that was the ambassador to the Vatican under George W. Bush. And they're like, the Vatican has an ambassador? I get that all the time. The Vatican had an ambassador, and I'm like, yeah, they're a country.
Well, that's why I wrote my book, is to show people why it's important. And first of all, why the Holy See's role in foreign affairs is important, and second, why it's important that the United States have a robust diplomatic engagement with them.
Yeah,
and leverage their soft power voice.
Sure. I didn't say ambassador to the Holy See because that was a whole different question. I figured if I said Vatican, that would at least cut to the chase there. But it's interesting. While you were doing that job, did you find people were like, really?
Sure. And really, you know, the State Department's a fairly secular institution, and there are a lot of people in the State Department that question it, you know, which is ironic because if you read and you go back and look at my book, during World War II, Sumner Wells was Secretary of State, and he felt that the relationship with the Vatican was probably more important than trying to maintain contacts through the embassy to Italy, because Mussolini had shut down all freedom of the press and communication and everything else like that. But, you know, when President Reagan tried to raise the mission to a full-fledged ambassador, there was some pushback, and there's still pushback. And that's part of why I wrote the book. I want people to realize that the Holy See has a strong voice to play, especially in the area of religious freedom and protecting the natural rights of man and human dignity, which are things that are important to the United States.
And so for the people who think that this just benefits Catholic Christians, obviously, I mean, what do you say to people? Because I'm sure that came up.
Well, that's vastly too narrow. The Holy See's diplomacy is deployed in support of anyone who believes that man's rights derive from God and not a state, that each human being has a right to essential human dignity and fair treatment in the world, and that religious freedom and freedom of association and all those freedoms which derive from religious freedom are paramount. And as such, I think they apply to anyone who believes in the Judeo-Christian ethic, and ultimately I'm going to be optimistic enough to know that they will apply to enough moderate Muslims.
Sure.
Someday.
Sure. And what do you think the, I mean, you've been behind the scenes on a lot of this type of diplomacy in your day. So based on what you're reading, what's it look like from your perspective? What's the insider's take? Do you think they'll be successful? I mean, is this something that might work, or is this kind of just a shot in the dark?
It's kind of that, there's a child's book that we used to read to our kids called Ming Lo Moves the Mountain. You know, it's the old thing about the pebbles in the pond. We have to take every step, every way to move public opinion, to draw more people into the debate. And that's what I think Pope Francis is trying to do with his move in Turkey, to pray with the imam, as Pope Benedict did, show that we can reach out to them and reach out to the moderate elements of Islam. And that at the end of the day, as Pope Francis has said, the Muslims have to solve this themselves. And unless we're just going to kill every one of them, they're going to have to solve it. And so we need to help them find ideological bases on which to change their interpretation of the Quran and their ideologies to bring them in consensus with the modern world.
Do you feel that the Shiites and the Sunnis have basically the same feeling towards the Christians?
No. I think the Shiites are much more hostile. Their interpretation of the Quran is much more hostile. Theologically, from what little bit I know about it, and that's getting a little bit out on the edge for me. I'm not a theologian. The Sunni interpretation of Islam is more secular. And that's why, you know, people like Saddam, people like King Abdullah in Jordan are more tolerant of Christians than Iran, you know.
And, Turkey is Sunni?
Turkey's Sunni, and Turkey's the original metaphor for the secular Islamic state, the modern Islamic state. And I think that's why it's so important that the Pope went there, to try to reinforce that. I know there's been some confusion. President Erdogan has spoken in many Islamic-centric phrases and things like that. But basically, Turkey's still a secular Islamic state. It's not unraveled yet.
Yet.
And the whole ISIS thing is the Shiite movement.
Sunnis.
That's Sunnis.
Yeah. What ISIS is basically al-Qaeda on steroids. It's taking the principles of these al-Qaeda Sunni revolutionaries and providing a organization, almost a organization of a sovereign state, if you will. They're trying to do that. They call it the caliphate. And they've also gone in and they've pilfered banks and they've taken over that dam in Iraq that creates revenue. It's a hydroelectric power plant, and they've been stealing oil, so they have revenues.
Right. And yet you still feel that the Shiites are more hostile towards the Christians than the Sunnis?
Dogmatically, I do. Dogmatically.
Okay.
I think ISIS is nothing but political hegemony.
Right.
And did you see that when you were, you know, when you were working? I mean, that hasn't been that long ago. You know?
When I was still the Holy See, al-Qaeda was in its infancy. There was no ISIS. And the big issue then was to try to draw moderate Muslims out to oppose al-Qaeda. Now the situation is much more complicated because you've got to deal with ISIS, you've got to deal with al-Qaeda, you've got to deal with al-Qaeda in Africa. You know, for example, I remember when Mrs. Bush came and we sat down with the Pope in 2005. Mrs. Bush, her daughter Barbara, and the Pope and me. And the Pope spoke about the exportation of radical Wahhabism from Saudi Arabia to Africa. And he said, this is going to create some bad things in Africa. It's going to radicalize heretofore secular Muslims. And look what we have. We have Boko Haram in Nigeria and Mali and all these horrible problems in Darfur as a result of that.
Mm. So the government of Turkey then is backing ISIS?
No, the government of Turkey is our ally. And it's complicated for Turkey because of the Kurds. You know, the government of Turkey, on the one hand, and this is the problem with the whole situation there, is deciding which enemy is worse, Bashar or ISIS. Because most every government involved would like to have both of them gone. The question becomes, who wants which one gone more? In Turkey's case, they're very concerned about Bashar and the Shias and the incitement of the Kurds, you know, within Turkey. On the other hand, we need the Kurds in Iraq and Syria because they're the only people around there that are sane and can fight.
Right.
So it's a very complicated dynamic of trying to get Turkey to help us and us help the Kurds that can fight, meanwhile not creating a disturbance within Turkey among the same tribe of people.
Sure, and not handing over all our stuff so that they can switch teams and use it against us, which happens.
Yeah, we know that's happened in Afghanistan, don't we?
Yeah, because that happens pretty regularly. It's like, they're our friends, they're not friends. So the enemy of my enemy is my friend sometimes has a few more...
For now.
Has a few more my enemy of my enemy of my enemy, you know. It goes around and around, and it's not... I guess we better take a quick break. Sorry, we've been gone for a few weeks on the radio, so this whole idea of being interrupted in our conversations is hard. We got to get back with the program, as they say. So thank our advertisers and sponsors, and thank KCNR, 1460 AM, for having us back on. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
You're listening to an encore presentation of We the People from December 7th of last year here on AM 1460 KCNR.
During the holiday season at Wellgate Sports Club, we want to give you the gift of health and fitness. Hi, I'm Rich Novelli, President and COO of Wellgate Sports Club. For a limited time, we are offering no dupes until 2016. So call today at 768-1205 for your personal tour. At Wellgate Sports Club, you will experience exceptional every day. At Wellgate Sports Club, we wish all of you a happy and healthy holiday season.
Join the City of Reading as we turn off our outdoor irrigation. As our serious water crisis continues, the city is facing large fines from the state if we don't meet our mandate. Those recent rains we've been enjoying won't end the drought overnight, but they're enough to let you turn off your sprinklers for the year. The shorter days and cool nights mean you don't need to keep those sprinklers running. You'll save plenty of water and reduce your utility bill at the same time. Check out other water-saving tips at cityofreading.org. Be water wise, water less, and together we'll all get through this.
This is Carl Bott. I'm sitting with Ted Ogilvie here, manager and head driller of Diamond Core Drilling. You know, Ted, with all this water shortage and the drought that's going on, people have a lot of questions about their water wells. What can Diamond Core Drilling do for these people?
I've seen a lot of people run out of water, and it takes a very long time to get a driller scheduled. What we'd like to do is see if we can pull a Department of Water Resources log that shows the construction details of the well. And then we also like to come out and do an actual site visit and inspect the well and see if there's anything that can be done with the well.
Now, this is a free consultation, right?
Yeah, absolutely, Carl. We don't charge anything for that. We've been providing water well services since 1980. We're veteran-owned, veteran-managed. You can reach us at area code 530-275-8162, or you can visit our website, diamondcoredrilling.net.
That's Diamond Core Drilling. They can help you with any of your water well needs.
This is Ted Ogilvie. We're here to help.
KCNR, 1460 AM, the most local programming in Northern California.
Turkey for me, turkey for you. Let's eat the turkey in my big brown shoe. Love to eat the turkey at the table. I once saw a movie with Betty Grable. Eat that turkey all night long. 50 million Elvis fans can't be wrong. Turkey lurkey do and turkey lurkey dap. I eat that turkey, then I take a nap.
It's the only song I could find with turkey in it.
Oh, that's close.
Good job. Good job. I'm like, why are we listening to Adam Sandler? I get it. It was the turkey song. Oh, people have missed you, Bob, I'm sure. So welcome back. You're listening to We the People Radio. We are on with Ambassador Francis Rooney. He was ambassador to the Holy See during the Bush administration. And we've linked up the Time article. Actually, what is it called? Pope Francis's Soft Power Diplomacy Aims to Bring Islam into the Modern World. And, you know, honestly, the rest of the stuff we're doing isn't really working, so I think, I guess we could say this is a great Hail Mary, huh?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think we need to try every weapon in the quiver, you know,
exactly.
To fight these problems. And that's what the Pope's role as a soft power voice, you know, can be important. And it started with Pope Benedict at Regensburg when he spoke out so aggressively, certainly more aggressively than the elected officials at the time had done, about Islam, radical Islam, and terrorism using religion as an excuse. And now Pope Francis has picked up the mantle. And recently the Jordanian minister of religion made a comment that basically we can't fight ISIS and Al-Qaeda ideologies without our own ideological and cultural attack. It can't be done militarily. We need a soft power voice, which is exactly what the Holy See is trying to accomplish.
And how does what he, I mean, obviously he's the Pope, so he has a huge megaphone there, but what is he allowed to do, or what can he do that world leaders can't do?
I would say there's two things. First of all, he's respected in a different way, because the Holy See, being kind of a unique sovereign with no territory and hegemonic agenda, is respected on its morality, on the moral value of its argument. So it's harder to impeach it and dismiss it. Second, he can speak as a religious leader. And this is, you know, these are issues that are couched in religion. Whether they're really religious or not, we can discuss, and I doubt they really are. But, and as Ambassador Charles Freeman said here a couple of weeks ago at an Arab and American Policy Institute, he was the ambassador of Saudi Arabia and China, really smart guy. He said, basically, the United States is a secular power, and really no other secular power has the standing to deal with a religious dispute. We need the Muslim countries and the Muslim leaders, and derivatively, similarly, we need the Holy See as the ultimate religious speaker in the world to speak up.
Yeah, and obviously, well, okay, what's your take? I won't say anything. What's your take on how the American system has weighed in, we'll say?
Well, you know, I think Secretary Kerry used the same language that the Pope used on his return from Korea when he talked about the possible application of the just war theory. He said, you know, for the just war theory to apply, you have to have a threat which is broader than just one sovereign picking with another sovereign. And we certainly have that with ISIS. Second, you have to have a broad response, which is broader than one sovereign attacking a sovereign. And we certainly need that. And he spoke of the community of nations. And that's exactly what Secretary Kerry has been speaking of, in trying to recruit other nations to jump into the fray and sign on with the United States, especially focusing on those nations near the conflict in the Middle East who stand the most to gain and have the most to lose.
So if you were going to... If you were going to advise them, what would you tell them?
Advise who? The Muslim nations?
No. If you were behind the scenes with, you know, our guys, with Kerry and them,
I would say the same thing that I have said. I would say you're absolutely right. You need to put major pressure on the Arab countries to jump into this and stop enabling. We've enabled the Arab countries for many years.
Yes.
And now it's time for them to step up. You know, Turkey has fighters. Kurds are good fighters. Iraqis are good fighters. The United Arab Emirates are apparently good fighters from what I've read. All of those countries have plenty of airborne armaments and missiles and things like that. Those guys need to get up there because it's really their fight.
Why do you think they don't?
I think, first of all, we've been ready to enable them to secure our oil. And the geopolitics of oil have shifted, and we have a little more flexibility now with the American production up to over 9 million barrels a day than we used to have. And
so we don't have to leap in and lead the charge. And I mean, because it seems like we always run in and say, hey, follow me. And if we turn around and they're gone, we just send more guys.
Yeah, I would like to love to have Dean Acheson and George Kennan alive today. The guys that came up with the containment policy for the Soviet Union in the Cold War, because they realized they had something they couldn't beat on the ground. So they found another way to do it. And what they did was they contained it and made it turn inward. And it took God knows how many years, 40 years maybe, for it to finally implode, but it finally did. And I'm not so sure that that's not the kind of approach we need to ring fence the Middle East, let the people in the Middle East put the boots on the ground, continue to support them with armaments and technology and intelligence. It's not our fight. And in that sense, I have to say, I think the president's right.
Yeah. Cause
and there's not a whole lot I agree with that guy about, but this is one.
No, I think you're absolutely correct. I mean, those folks have the most to gain and the most to lose. They need to be in this fight with everything.
Yeah. They tend to, it seems like they're in it until all of a sudden they're not in it. And those guys live right in their, I mean, I realize it's a big place, but they live right in their neighborhood.
Yeah.
And they're fairly...
Saudi Arabia, sure. How they have bought peace at home by exporting Wahhabism in Africa. And now we're reaping what we sow.
Yeah, what do you think about the Saudis in this whole thing?
Well, I think it's very unfortunate that they have spread these madrasas in Africa and created things like Boko Haram, and they bought peace at home, and now they have a huge welfare state at home. The good thing for the United States, I guess, is that it requires a fairly high price of oil to support it, which means that they can't undermine our domestic petroleum industry too badly.
How much of all this over, you know, the last 50 years, 60 years has been, you know, how, I guess maybe what, how high a quotient does the oil play?
You know, I think it's had a high one. And if you read Daniel Yergin's book, you'd probably agree. Until the shale revolution, which nobody foresaw, we were at the mercy of the Middle Eastern oil producers.
And so
and that was, I think, part of the unstated cornerstone of American foreign policy all through the Clinton and Bush administrations.
So now with more domestic production, sure. So how much do you think that's going to play into our ability to be more hands off and say, hey guys, like, we'll help you, but you're going to have to do the deed? Do they realize that? I mean, I'm sure they can see it.
Yeah, it should do that. And conversely, what that does is it makes them more solicitous of the Chinese, and that gets into a competition between the Arab countries and Russia for who can sell their products to the Chinese, and Iran, all three of them trying to sell their products to the Chinese, all of which is really good for us. We want everybody else fighting over everything, not just us.
Yeah, it's nice when we're not the only guys with the gun pointed at our heads.
Right.
Because that seems to be what happens all the time. Bob, do we have to, unfortunately, we have to take another break. We need to take another quick break. We'll be right back with Ambassador Rooney. We'll talk some more about the Middle East and just where you see some of this going. You get to have a little bit longer view than we do. You have better history. You're listening to KCNR 1460 AM.
The Eastern world, it is exploding. Violence flaring, bullets loading. You're old enough to kill, but not for voting. You don't believe in war, but what's that gun you're toting? And even the Jordan River has bodies floating. But you tell me over and over and over again, my friend, you don't believe we're on the eve of destruction.
You're listening to We the People, an encore from December 7th of last year, and you're hearing it on AM 1460 KCNR.
Take your passion. Hi, Linda Bott here from KCNR.
And Nathan Parmalee from Reading's own Civic Auditorium.
The Reading Civic is bringing the excitement to its newly updated theater. The 2015-2016 season promises to wow you and include a 15% savings option when you purchase tickets to three or more shows.
So start your holiday season with the exquisite artistry of Moscow Ballet's Great Russian Nutcracker. Enjoy heartfelt Christmas classics with the Oak Ridge Boys Christmas Show, and take in the stunning debut of the Civic's very own production of Christmas Carol, A Love Story.
2016 kicks off with the pop culture phenomenon of Flashdance the Musical.
The devilishly funny production of C.S. Lewis's Screwtape Letters.
The wildly theatrical show Blue Man Group, and the fun family experience of Chris Perandi's Stunt Dog Experience.
For tickets and more, visit ReadingCivic.com or the Reading Civic box office.
See you at the show!
Founded in 1995, GI Pathology is the only physician-owned laboratory in the United States dedicated solely to the practice of gastrointestinal and liver pathology. The company provides the highest quality GI pathology diagnosis made exclusively by one of our fellowship-trained gastrointestinal and liver pathologists. GI Pathology delivers results to its Northern California client base within an industry-leading 24 hours. Call 888-2-GI-PATH or go to www.gipath.com for more information.
So, Chris, December 8th, Haven's monthly Second Tuesday Club is meeting for lunch at Jersey Mike's Subs.
Lunch in a submarine and I have to wear a jersey?
It's a sub sandwich location, not a submarine in the water. Join us for lunch Tuesday, December 8th at Jersey Mike's on Browning Street next to Trader Joe's. Your support will allow Haven to continue to help thousands of animals with shelter and homes as Jersey Mike's kindly donates a portion of the proceeds to Haven Humane's efforts.
Well, I think lunch in a submarine would be really cool and I'd love to wear my favorite team jersey.
Yeah, great.
KCNR, 1460 AM, the most local programming in Northern California.
I just came back from a place where they hated me and everything I stand for. A land where our brothers are dying for others who don't even care anymore. Chances are I never will be the same. I really don't know anymore. I just came back from a war.
Thank you to all of our veterans here on Pearl Harbor Day. Nice selections, Bob.
Yeah, we don't hear much about Pearl Harbor Day.
We don't, and that was something. We're going to have Kim Chamberlain on, and I don't know who the other person is, but he is, I don't know if he's a serviceman or another person from South Korea, but she told a great story this morning, and apparently they have a fairly long story they do together about that era, and they were both obviously there.
Wow.
So anyway, we're going to do that
first
on the radio.
Hand.
I thought, ooh, people need to hear that. Hey, just so people can know what they're looking forward to, last week I met the CIA guy in Washington, D.C. that waterboarded Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, and I released the picture of the fuzzy foreigner. You never know who you're going to meet. That was a fairly interesting catch. So I think he's going to be on with us next week, so don't miss next week. I think it'll be interesting.
Where can we find the picture?
Yeah, I'll put the picture up on the website. You know, it's the really fuzzy one. It's the one that, I guess it ties into today. It's the one the Turkish hair removal company, they make hair removal products. They used him as like their poster boy. Like,
oh,
you don't have
gosh.
To be, you don't have to be this fuzzy. And people went crazy. They're like, he's a terrorist. What are you using his picture for? They were like, oh, we just used it because he was hairy. Maybe I read a wider swath of news than other people do. That was pretty recent, actually. Poor guys. So Bill,
yeah.
Bill had a relevant question.
Take it away, Bill. Do you think Pope Francis will have much of an impact or influence on Turkey as far as the Christian churches opening up or getting, you know, some of those churches back online?
Hard to say. I don't think we know yet just where Erdogan is. You know, he says some bad things, and he says some good things.
Hmm.
I think that the Pope's visit there can only help, and I don't think Turkey will totally squash out the church, but whether they're going to allow, like, the Hagia Sophia or something like that to go back to being a church, I seriously mm-hmm. doubt.
Yeah, because I think it's a museum now or something, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, maybe the Pope's visit will stop them from turning it back into a mosque.
Hmm.
Right.
That's good. That would be good. Helpful
yeah.
a little bit.
Yeah, because that's something that's happening pretty much throughout that whole region is more and more of these Christian churches are being closed by the government.
Yeah, it's they are, and it's unfortunate.
Mm-hmm.
And it's unfortunate because the thing that it reflects is the biggest problem that is going to be faced in bringing Islam into, you know, conformance with the modern world is to separate the secular from the religious.
Right.
And they have problems with that, and I don't think it's sorted out yet.
No.
And that's all part of what Pope Francis was saying, what Pope Benedict was saying, is that, you know, you have to render under Caesar and you render under God. And in the modern world, you know, there's a limited place for Sharia law in civil society, but there's plenty of room for the Quran as a religious document to do its thing with Muslims, just like there's plenty of room for the Bible for Christians and Jews.
Right, but that's where we run into the problem is the Sharia law part of it. I think a lot of these countries like England that have allowed that to take place are having some big problems now.
Huge mistake.
Yes.
And I happened to have the chance to talk to Prime Minister Blair about that.
Oh, really?
In 2007. I couldn't believe that after the bombings in London, they drew those Pakistani neighborhood councils in and said, you can apply Sharia law domestically in your neighborhoods. And I think it's a horrible idea, and it's a terrible idea for the United States to even remotely consider. You know, I might say I'm from the state of Oklahoma, which proactively a couple of years ago did a vote to assure that Sharia law would never apply in the state of Oklahoma.
And I've heard some stories that there are some areas in this country where they have allowed that. Have you heard that?
Michigan, it seems to have.
Yeah, I have. Yeah, there's a big conclave of Muslims in Michigan and Somalis in Minnesota.
Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of Somalis.
That draws the fault line right there. Sharia law versus our American civil law. I mean, how you can't square those two.
No, they don't go hand in hand. They can't coexist.
Right. You can respect the Quran as a religious document, and it can be interpreted as the Bible is, and bring it into more modern interpretations, if you will. I think the Vatican uses the word develop the interpretation. But this Sharia law, most of it has no place with modern jurisprudence.
Well, it'd be like us saying, in the Bible it says an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth, so yeah, we all have hot pokers now. We run around with them. Ah, you offended me. Bing.
Yeah. Bing. So now, when we read that in the Bible, and we read Leviticus and all this other strange stuff, we look at it as a historical anachronism. And that's how we have to get them to think of their Quranic, some of their Quranic shiras.
Yeah, what's the likelihood of that? Because the Muslims that are not, you know, psychos running around with giant swords, do those guys understand that?
Well, you know, there's 1.2 billion or something Muslims, just about the same number as Catholics, and I just can't imagine that many of them are radicalized. The issue is creating the opportunity, if you will, is to create a platform or many platforms where the moderate leaders who are articulate can speak up and write op-eds. There was a great op-ed in the Wall Street Journal today by a guy who was decrying the capture of that American in Syria. You know, more people need to speak up. That's one of the great things about when Pope Benedict spoke up at Regensburg. You know, they gave him all this hard time, but the fact is it drew a bunch of Muslims out of the woodwork who finally had to admit that they have to accept modernity. And this is exactly what's happened now that Pope Francis has spoken up about the just war theory and all that. There've been some Muslims come out and say, wow, you know, we need to speak up against this Islamic terrorism because it's not us.
What do you think, do you have a feel for, you know, what the ratio is between the radicalized Muslims versus the moderates? Because all you hear about are the radicalized ones, and
true.
Everybody says, oh, they're all the same, you know, they you know, don't trust any of them. And, I mean, obviously you're not going to get anywhere if that's the attitude you have, but when all you hear is the bad stuff, it makes it sound like the majority of them are radicalized.
Yeah, and that's the press. I just can't imagine that. I mean, you know, Iran has a strong middle class. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, maybe there's 1.2 billion Muslims. What could it be, 10 or 20% at the worst that are subject to this kind of radicalization? I really wouldn't know.
Mm-hmm.
But you look at the press in America, sometimes you would think that, you know, whether it's Indians or black people or working union workers or any sect of humanity, they can be drawn out of proportion.
Oh, sure. I mean, look what's going on with this whole Ferguson and New York thing. I mean, it makes it sound like it's this massive problem throughout the whole country. And really, I think the press is making more out of it than anybody else.
Well, I think they are. If they just said the civil justice system has worked and don't say another word, we'd probably all be better off.
Yeah, but that would take all the fun out of it for them.
That's not news.
Yeah. Let both sides go about their business to build their families and their careers and move on.
Right. Yeah, no kidding. Hey, what about Iran?
Iran is a very complicated place.
Yeah.
You know, they always joke that they play chess and we play checkers. And I think that's a little bit of that is happening right now with our nuclear negotiations. I mean, I don't know about you all, but I'm scared to death. The Obama administration wants a PR victory in negotiating with Iran. And
yeah.
I think Saudi Arabia is quite scared about that. It may have something to do with some of their actions. Just like they got a PR victory with China, you know, where China basically agreed to do what they'd already agreed to do. And Obama makes it sound like some kind of huge victory. You know, Iran is totally devoted to their self-interest.
Yes.
Right. And they're very, very good at taking their time to win their point over. I mean, they sit back and play this game because they know they've got nothing but time on their hands.
They're not playing speed chess.
No.
With a little timer.
No. They think if they wait long enough and they in a lot of cases it's true. They just wear you down until they get most of what they want.
Sure. They do yin yang, you know. We'll give a little bit here, we'll delay there, and some people think they already have nuclear weapons. Some people think they're right on the edge where they could agree to a lot of our things, mothball things. But then they could reactivate at a moment's notice once we're not watching anymore.
Right.
I don't know enough about it to be able to say, you know, definitively. But I do worry about, given the history of the Obama administration's political view of foreign policy, that they'd be willing to give in maybe where they shouldn't give in.
And do you think Israel would tolerate that?
I'm not sure Israel has any choice. You know, I just don't know that I see Israel whacking Iran. You know, Israel's got a lot of problems. I mean, you saw what happened here in the paper today about Netanyahu losing several voices in his cabinet and among his supporters because they're scared about, they don't want to take the hard line against the Palestinian settlements. And he's losing world opinion. Isn't it Spain, France, Sweden, and some other countries have voted to recognize a Palestinian state?
Mm-hmm.
Jeez.
That's yeah, and that, you know, I just fear that if Iran does have a nuclear weapon, they're not going to be afraid to use it. And I would think that Israel would feel the same way, that they're doomed if that happens. So where
does
that leave us?
But you know? The question there is, who do they hate worse, Saudi Arabia or Israel? I remember spending some time in pre-Iranian Revolution Iran. And their big enemy was the Sunni Arab states. They didn't really care about Israel.
Mm.
So of the political spin in Iran now about Israel is just that. Deep down inside, they hate Sunnis.
Interesting. You know, there's so many people that hate so many people for so many inexplicable reasons. It's really hard to keep track of.
Bosnia War and look at the Mostar Bridge. What was that thing, like 5th century bridge or something? And no one can understand why anybody would care about it, but it was a hatred that lingered on since then that made the Serbs bomb it. I mean, why'd they do that?
They have, like, literally the longest memories ever. They must start, like, from the time their kids are born, and it's kind of like how we learn nursery rhymes. These guys sit down and, like, those guys are bad because of this.
It's the Christians and the Muslims through history, and now you've got Muslims versus Christians. I mean, it's getting so complicated. You got to have a playbook.
Yeah. One of the ironies, and I put it in my book, is that when the First Crusade in the 11th century, when we were taking Jerusalem, the only reason we could take it is that the Seljuk Turks and the Shia Fatimids of Egypt were at war, and they wouldn't unite to fight us. And that's how we got Jerusalem. And we held it for 90-something years until the Shiites and the Sunnis united to come down and take us out.
Right, and I think if they united today, it'd be a whole different landscape as well. But I don't see that happening. Do you?
Mm-mm. No, this whole Iraq thing has been nothing but a Sunni Shiite deal.
Right,
and that's what the Vatican was. That's why the Vatican opposed Iraq too. Colonel Pialagi came and spoke with President Bush, and he said basically, if you take Saddam out, you're going to increase the persecution of Christians because he's protecting them. Two, you're going to inflame Sunni Shiite hatred. And three, as a result, you're going to accomplish for Iran taking over the eastern half of Iraq as a sphere of influence, if not technically, in something they haven't been able to do in a 12-year war against Saddam Hussein.
Yeah, true. I mean, that they had a shot at it for quite a while, over a decade.
Yeah, because that war ended pretty much in a stalemate, didn't it?
Yeah. And now but I will say this, okay? President Bush was keenly aware of the need to form a combination among Sunnis and Shiites in the Iraqi government under al-Maliki. And they worked really hard to keep al-Maliki on the reservation, if you will. Obama comes in there and lets him off the reservation entirely, and he totally kicks all the Sunnis out, creates a Shiite government, and no wonder the thing fell apart.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, all one way. It was never going to work that way.
Well, I think it's too bad. Sometimes liberals like to see the world how they want it instead of the world as it is.
As it really is.
Get all those facts getting in the way of a good story.
Yeah.
God. Hey, when we come back, I'd like to know if there are any things going on out there, moving pieces, good, bad, or indifferent, that we just don't hear about, and maybe sources on how we can get smarter there. We always like to put that out, since obviously this is a super complicated place in the Middle East, like your cheat sheet, if you will. We're speaking with, yes, we're going to come back, we're going to squeeze you for this cheat sheet here in the last throes of the game. We need to take a quick break, thank our advertisers and sponsors there. We're speaking with Ambassador Francis Rooney, who is the author of The Global Vatican. And if you go to wethepeopleradio.us, you will find a link to that book. And if you're sitting there with a pen and paper and you don't have that, you can also go to francisrooney.com, R-O-O-N-E-Y. There we go. All right, ready to hit it, Bob? Oh, this is a no-lead-in thing, huh? You're listening to We the People Radio at KCNR 1460 AM.
Get up in the morning, slaving for bread, sir, so that every mouth can be fed. Oh, me Israelite. Get up in the morning, slaving for bread, sir, so that every mouth can be fed.
Jones's Fork, Redding's full-line gun shop, offers the largest selection of guns and gun accessories in the North State. We are Redding's full-line gun shop. Since 1969, we have been serving the Redding area. We at Jones's Fork take pride in being able to offer you sound advice on all your gun questions. You'll always find a good selection of new and used guns at Jones's Fork. We'll help you find a gun that is perfect for you. Have a gun you no longer need? Bring it to us. We buy, trade, and consign. Informal appraisals are given free at no charge. No gun shop is complete without expert gunsmiths. We have 4 full-time gunsmiths who can service all types of firearms. In our full machine shop, we can enhance the performance of your favorite gun or build you a custom gun to meet your needs. Marshal Dave Jones II heads up our Firearm Institute, where we do California concealed weapon classes, Utah classes, and hunter education classes. Come see us at Jones's Fort.
View 202, the only restaurant where you can enjoy your favorite cuisine on the river. Now with our new menu additions, including classics like sweet potato fries, View 202 burger, fish and chips, and the old hatch cover favorite, Mai Mai Almondine. Also new, 6 unique flatbread pizzas with toppings from beer braised chicken, spicy Italian sausage, to seared wild mushrooms. Try their smoked steelhead Benedict or the Cali Benedict with avocado and roasted tomato. And on Sunday, enjoy Linda Bott and her jazz ensemble along with bottomless mimosas and half-off bottles of wine all day. Happy Hour is every Monday through Thursday with drink and appetizer discounts. Friday nights are rocking with live music from 6 to 9. View 202 serves only the freshest local ingredients. Executive Chef Dustin, along with his staff, are passionate about their guests having an exceptional culinary experience. View 202, 226-8439. That's 226-8439.
Who doesn't love Dickens' classic story, A Christmas Carol? Christmas isn't the same without its fascinating tale of spirits, adventure, greed, and of course, Ebenezer Scrooge.
Join us this holiday season for the Reading Civic Repertory's magical debut of Christmas Carol, A Love Story.
Fabiano Altamura's new adaptation will have it all, from gorgeous sets to spooky spirits and music that will have you dancing the humbug.
Will Ebenezer Scrooge get what he deserves, or will the miser choose a different path? Come and find out on December 19th and 20th at the Reading Civic Auditorium. Get tickets at the Reading Civic Auditorium's box office. Call 229-0022 or at readingcivic.com.
Brought to you by Meeks Lumber, Zimmer Construction, Hudson Entertainment, and Hilltop Medical Clinic. Don't miss this Christmas spectacular, Christmas Carol, A Love Story, December 19th and 20th, 2 p.m. and 7 p.m. at the Reading Civic Auditorium.
Join the conversation in our chat room, KCNR1460.com.
Great,
have Belgians in the Congo?
I don't know. It's really fast, Liz. You can sit there with a pen and play it over and over and over again.
I don't know.
Ambassador Rooney, we're really excited about this new time. We got to thinking about it last night at Mass. And so airing now from 12 to 2, our parish priest, Father George, he spends a lot of time at the Vatican, and I think he would ultimately probably maybe like to work there at some point in his career. But we'd like to have him on with you at some point in the future. And
great.
You kids could talk shop.
Yeah, he's the pro. I'm the rookie. I'm the diplomatic guy. He's the theological guy.
Well, he was really outspoken about Obamacare and things like that, and I thought, whoa, outspoken is cool. So, yeah, so we're booking you again. We don't know when, though. We're just, you know.
Great.
We just thought we'd just give you a little fair warning there. All right, so
by the way, you all have the best music of any station I've ever
heard. That's so funny. That's what we just told Bob on the break. We're like, the reason all these people want to come back, Bob, is because they want to know what songs we're going to play. It is fun, though, isn't it?
Very nice.
Takes all these crazy, difficult topics and at least gives us a little something to, you know. A little something to lighten the burden. So if people are going to follow all this stuff and, you know, and they don't want to go back and get a degree in Middle East politics, but they want to follow it and they'd like some perspective outside the American media, what do you recommend people follow?
Well, you know, the media is always the flavor of the day, is like you said, you know. I think that there's some websites where you can look and you can see where the Sunni Shiite population centers are. And that will show you that what can go haywire is Yemen and Bahrain, where there's a Shia majority but a Sunni government. Then you can look at the Kurds and you can look at Turkey and you realize that those guys can fight. So if they can fight and Arabs can't fight, then it's pretty obvious to me, even for a guy from Oklahoma, that we need to be working with the Turks and the Kurds, because we don't want to put boots on the ground there. We already realized in 12 years that doesn't work. Then if you look at the geography of the place, with the Mediterranean, with Turkey on the north, and with basically nothing but desert and Saudi Arabia on the south and Iran on the east, I think you kind of ring fence it and you say, fellas, figure it out.
Yeah,
and you say anybody that's fighting over there that's a United States citizen, you just lost your citizenship and your passport. Don't come back.
I forgot about that part.
We're done with you. Yep. If you're fighting for ISIS or Al Qaeda, we're done with you.
Yeah, you stay there.
Don't come back.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And maybe even take them out. Maybe take a few of them out as an example.
Well, we're pretty good at that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Direct hit.
Mm-hmm. This is hardball stuff. It's not pleasant.
No, it really is. And I think anytime somebody goes over and fights for another country, I think that should just be automatic.
Against us.
Yeah, I think it's just automatic. You don't get to come back into the country.
Well, it got Nathan Hale hanged.
Mm-hmm.
That's true. We do have some history there.
You know, and remember what President Chirac said to George Bush. He said, you know, we don't have a Fourth Amendment. I know everybody that's in France. I know everybody that's coming into France. And I don't have to fight the enemy abroad, because if they come into France, I'll take them down. We have the Fourth Amendment, and thank God we do. That means that we have to have a more protracted security net than countries that don't have a Fourth Amendment. And I'm all for the Fourth Amendment, believe me, having seen what countries without a Fourth Amendment can do to their citizens. But it does mean that we need to think about how do we contain the Middle East and turn it inside on itself.
Exactly. So, and tell me again how you pronounce their Sharia law that we always call Sharia. You call it Sharia?
Sharia? Sharia, you know, sometimes it has a T on it, sometimes it doesn't. I speak Spanish and Italian, I don't really speak Arabic.
But we don't speak any of those, so we're following you.
As a civil law system, it's totally incompatible with American and Anglo-Saxon jurisprudence.
So there's no, if we just play nice and let them have a little, it'll all work out.
Yeah, I don't believe it. In fact, I really don't believe the thing about giving up a little bit of freedom to get something you want, whether it's contraception or whether it's allowing Sharia law or taking kids to see iftar dinners. They can't go to a synagogue or a church. I don't buy that stuff at all.
No, it's totally crazy.
You never get it back.
All right, we've got 10 seconds. Thank you so much, Ambassador Rooney. We're bringing you back. We're going to arm wrestle Father George and get him on here with us.
That'd be great. I hope you all have a great afternoon. Thank you so much.
Thanks for spending Sunday with us. We really appreciate it.
Hour from townhall.com. I'm Gordon Griffin. President Obama says it's important that Paris host this week's International Climate Summit following this month's terror attacks. White House correspondent Greg Clugston reports.
Even with Paris still on edge after the deadly attacks, the president says the global gathering sends a strong message.
What a powerful rebuke to the terrorists it will be when the world stands as one and shows that we will not be deterred from building a better future.
And the host, French President Hollande, agrees. He says there's no better symbol of solidarity than holding international talks in Paris. Greg Clugston, the White House.
France's interior minister says 174 protesters are in detention facing possible charges after clashing with riot police on the eve of a critical climate conference. He says that a total of 208 people were arrested after the clashes, but some were later released. Police said that they used tear gas to stop several hundred people throwing projectiles that included candles that had been set out in memory of terror attack victims. Ben Carson has been to the Syrian refugee camps in Jordan, and he says that the U.S. ought to be pumping more money into that country.
Last month, we spent $3 billion on Halloween candy. That's the amount of money that would need it to bridge the shortfall for a year that they're having in Jordan with the refugees.
The GOP presidential hopeful tells ABC's this week that the U.S. would not need to take in Syrians if the camps were beefed up. A judge is set to hear arguments this week on Boston Marathon bomber Zohar Tsarnaev's request for a new trial. Hearing is scheduled for Tuesday in federal court in Boston. Tsarnaev is asking for a new trial in a different location. The defense has argued that a jury in the Boston area couldn't be objective. Tsarnaev was convicted and sentenced to death earlier this year for his role in the 2013 attack that killed three people and injured more than 260 others. More on these stories at townhall.com.
For all of you who love to give thoughtful holiday cards that are a true reflection of you.
For all of you who love the holiday cards you send to make it to the mantles and refrigerators of your loved ones.
For all of you who are inspired to create your own holiday cards and just need the simple tools to bring your holiday vision to life.
For all of you, there's Vistaprint.com. At Vistaprint.com, making your own unique holiday cards is simple and easy. There are hundreds of designs to choose from. You can include your own message, even upload your own photos from Facebook. And right now, they're 60% off. It's our best deal of the season. Plus, right now, during our Black Friday Cyber Monday sale, you can also save on one-of-a-kind gifts, like personalized mugs, calendars, canvas prints, and more. And because it's Vistaprint, your satisfaction is absolutely guaranteed. But hurry, this holiday offer ends December 6th. To get 60% off all quantity, style, sizes, and stocks of personalized holiday cards and save on personalized holiday gifts, go to Vistaprint.com and enter code RADIO60 at checkout. That's Vistaprint.com, code RADIO60.
Student protests are about power, and now that leftists have it, what good to them is free speech? That's the question asked by Charles Kessler, professor of government at Claremont McKenna College, home to recent protest over a Halloween costume. He says when most colleges were founded, students were older and different.
There were Quonset Hut classrooms, which would have been very familiar to the ex-GIs. They were therefore older. They were more serious. They had seen how bad the world could be, and they had a maturity to them and a political maturity to them that, alas, many students today conspicuously lack.
Charles Kessler's latest column for the Wall Street Journal titled, When the College Madness Came to My Campus. A man suspected of fatally shooting a police officer is in custody at a Pennsylvania hospital. After a six-hour manhunt, St. Clair Township officer Lloyd Reed was killed last night while responding to a domestic dispute. Westmoreland County District Attorney John Peck says that he'll be charged with homicide and two other counts. More on these stories at townhall.com. If you don't like Obamacare, how about BernieCare?
Democratic presidential candidate Bernie Sanders has an ambitious repeal and replace plan to replace the Affordable Care Act. A single-payer plan is loosely modeled after health care in Canada and most of Western Europe. In Sanders' plan, almost all the health care system would be put in the hands of the federal government, incorporating Medicare and Medicaid so patients would have no gaps in coverage. Sanders would eliminate things such as insurance premiums, deductibles, and copays, and replace them with additional taxes. Ron DeRockster reporting.
Big day for Andy Murray. He's given Britain its first Davis Cup title in 79 years. Murray beat Belgium's David Goffin 6-3, 7-5, 6-3 in reverse singles today, giving Britain an unassailable 3-1 lead in the best-of-five series. The final singles match was not played. It's the 10th title for Britain, which is the only nation to have competed in all Davis Cup editions since 1900. Britain last won it in 1936. More on these stories at townhall.com.
The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Where we remind you, you're listening to an encore presentation of We the People that originally aired on December 7th of last year.
We just discovered during the break I have a pen and a finger. I can do whatever I want. I called our guest. Ha! Huh.
Wow, so why are you picking your nose?
Yeah. So you're welcome back to We the People Radio, actually. All right. So second hour, we're at a different time.
You may have a finger, but I have a phone.
Yeah, there you go. Well, you know, and it depends on who's more important there. I have a pen. I've got a pen and a finger. Let's see. First hour, we chatted with the ambassador.
I got a whole lot of love.
To the Vatican. All right, everybody's fired. That's it. No more afternoon show. We're going back to mornings. In the morning, we're all tired and we can't pay attention. Now the afternoon, we're all geared up. So we're going to be from noon to 2. So this is our first program back. So noon to 2. The website's been kind of re-engineered a little bit. It's not as awesome as when Robert does it, but...
That's noon to 2 Pacific time for those of you on the internet.
Oh, excellent point. Thank you very much, PST. So the website's been re-engineered. So wethepeopleradio.us is where you can find stuff. And I've got a link on there. Let's see, what's... it's not new, but it is different. I've set up a link for our email list. So I'll send out an email about the show. And for all those of you who got it and the print was white on white, I just want you to know when I sent it, there was a brown background just like the website. And somehow it disappeared. So you got a white on white email that didn't say anything. I'm sorry. I'll get it fixed. And so anyway, we'll be able to get a little more information out to you a little quicker that way. And we've got everything on there today about Mr. Leighton Stewart, who is our guest for the second hour. We just kind of grabbed the stuff from the last show, but he's going to talk to us about a different topic. No catastrophic global warming evidence, which just makes me excited.
I am so disappointed.
Yeah.
I thought the end of I've been told the end of the world was coming. Water levels were coming up. I bought property because I wanted beachfront.
At the top of a mountain? Oh,
yeah.
Beachfront.
Yeah, I'm not going to get my beachfront now. I got to cancel my boat order. Whole thing's just coming apart.
Whole thing's blowing apart. Well, yeah. I'll tell you what, Mr. Stewart, you were the purveyor of more fun for me than I can possibly convey when you told us about the 400 parts per million of CO2 in regular air, and then the 40,000 parts per million if we were to do mouth-to-mouth resuscitation on someone. That is a show...
That's just simply a fact.
Yes, and it is a total showstopper, because I've had multiple people who were, you know, global warming alarmists, and some professionals as well. And I said, well, if that's the case, and I'm not a scientist, and don't pretend to be one, but...
Don't even play one on TV.
No, but as the sheriff taught me, I have stayed at a Holiday Inn Express, so apparently... That's always Tom's line. But
did you leave the light on for
I've
him,
I stayed
though.
At a Holiday Inn Express. but I asked him that. I said, you know, if CO2 is a pollutant, then how does this work? And I've asked him that thing, and they all go,
I love it.
It's a deal breaker. It's awesome.
Well, it's absolutely true. And for the government, our president, the EPA, to call carbon dioxide a pollutant is just scientifically embarrassing. And the only thing that's getting polluted there are our children's minds. Unfortunately, it's not just the children. It's a lot of adults also.
Well,
because that's all we hear. They never say CO2 in a sentence without also saying pollutant in the same sentence.
But they don't really care about false. They don't really care about being embarrassed. I don't think they can be.
No.
So
I got to see Nancy Pelosi in the flesh last week. She had clothes on, too. I mean, just in case that sounded a little weird.
Yeah, that did sound a little strange.
Yeah.
That was a really bad image.
Yeah, let me walk that back.
I'm still there.
No, I was looking down on the House floor, and there were people kind of, it was one of those votes where they didn't have to do a lot of talking. They were just waiting for people to finish voting, so they were walking around talking to each other. And I'm looking down, and I see the whole place just erupt into this kind of mushrooming chaos.
And it was Nancy, and I looked down, it's like this one person was causing all this chaos, people jumping out of the way and things falling down, and excuse me, pardon me, it's Nancy Pelosi.
Grand entrance.
Yeah, so. They've got big things they've got to handle on that side of the aisle. Not the least of which is the pollutant of carbon. Okay, so you're going to talk to us today about the big climate treaty razzle-dazzle.
Oh, you mean with China? Oh, yes.
Yeah.
That means absolutely nothing to China, and it means everything to us because it gets us to commit to reducing our CO2 while they say, well, 16 years from now, we'll reduce ours.
Yeah, you know? In the meantime, we collapse our economy trying to abide by the rules that we made, and they sit back and laugh at us.
It's the rickshaw. Correct. The rickshaw
they do.
Transfer.
They must just giggle at us all the time, and it's not just the Chinese. It's anybody else that's in there that's saying the same thing. Russia, India, they're not going to cut back on CO2.
They all pray we do because they know what the outcome's going to be.
Correct. And as we stop using the cheapest, most reliable energies, which right now are still fossil fuels, and move to the most expensive and unreliable energies on Earth, which right now are wind and solar, we will be committing unilateral economic suicide because nobody else will be that dumb. They won't do that.
No.
They'll continue to use coal. They'll continue to use oil and gas. And so it just makes no common sense at all that we want to put a gun to our head like that.
Well, I hope that in light of the new arrangement we have back in Washington, that maybe we can get some of this coal back online. But I don't know. I think that's going to take quite a bit to reverse the laws that they put up there against coal. I mean, it's madness.
Well, yeah, that's right. But that's obviously the best thing that happened in this last election. We now have both houses up there, the House and the Senate, that will be demanding from the Environmental Protection Agency that they show us the scientific data that let them end up calling carbon dioxide a dangerous pollutant. The House has been asking them that now for some extended period of time, and they've just ignored the demand. But hopefully with the House and the Senate asking them for that data, which should be public data, we'll get to see what they have and what they do not have in the way of real evidence that lets them call carbon dioxide, which is responsible for all life on Earth, essentially, for calling it a dangerous pollutant. It's unbelievable what they've gotten away with on that.
Right.
And, of course, these are bureaucrats. They're not elected. They're appointed by the Obama administration or any other administrations in power at the time. But bad deal.
Yeah, because they don't have any scientific data to support that position, correct?
If they really had a lot of empirical, I'm talking about real scientific observations, wouldn't they be putting it on the front page every day to prove to people what's going on? All they have are unvalidated computer models. And when I say unvalidated, that means those models do not produce a scientific outcome, scientific data that could be used in a formal debate. And so that's why you're not seeing formal debates on this issue. They just say, well, they don't want to debate us. You know, they've already, everybody knows, 97% of the people all say that CO2 is the big problem. Well, of course, that's a bad thing to start with, and that comment is really a lie. But they will not enter with public debates because empirical evidence, which is what we on the other side have been looking at, trumps these man-made, unvalidated models every time. And they know they can't win a scientific debate on that. The real sad part about this is that the true environmentalists out there that don't understand climate change, and that's easy to understand for me because it is horribly complex. climate change itself is and all of the different factors that go into letting you arrive at some kind of decision there. The true environmentalists have just been grossly misled on this. And a last survey I saw, which sometime back now, said that 80% of the American people consider themselves environmentalists. Of course, that ranges from extremist on one end to, you know, hardly caring on the other end, but except just they want to live in a decent environment. But that's Republicans, Democrats, Independents, the whole bunch. I think the mistake that was made in the last presidential election was that the fellow running against Mr. Obama just never got into this subject and talked about the difference between empirical evidence and all this made-up model stuff that Mr. Obama was talking about. And so a lot of people of this 80% that might have been sitting on the fence, I think they thought, well, Mr. Obama must be our environmentalist because he's at least saying we ought to cut back on carbon dioxide, which is a big dangerous pollutant. So I think that was a big mistake that was made there. But when you look at the facts, you can get real comfortable when you look at the facts that carbon dioxide, which is a mild greenhouse gas, is not a major cause of global climate change. I'm a geologist. I'm accustomed to looking back at the Earth in previous years to see why the earthquakes are where they are, why the volcanoes are where they are, etc., to understand why we see them where we do today. The same approach is absolutely applicable in science, in climate change science. And so I've looked back 500 million years now to see what Earth's old temperatures were with all the different proxy records that you can find to dig it out of and stable isotope ratios, et cetera, and what Earth's old temperatures were. And when you look at that, you do not see a big cause and effect where CO2 is causing the big major climate changes. It's just not there. It's not there now for the last, 16, 17 years. The CO2 level is still going up steeply, and Earth hasn't warmed at all.
But even if the CO2 did increase and the temperature did go up, that's not necessarily a bad thing, is it?
Oh, no, it's not necessarily a bad thing. But it is what got us in trouble with this thing back in the from the mid-70s up into the late 90s, because CO2 level was going up steeply, as it continues now, and the Earth's temperature was going up. So people said, aha, look at this correlation. CO2's level's going up, temperature's going up. But now, for the last decade and a half, CO2 level's continuing up and the temperature is not rising at all. So that kind of makes one stop and scratch their chin a little bit if they've got any objectivity to themselves at all. On the Earth getting warmer, if a warmer world is hazardous to people's health, why do people living in the North and the Northeast move to Florida, Texas, Arizona, California?
Yeah, what are they doing retiring?
Where it may be 20 degrees warmer over the course of a year, and they live longer. Two statisticians from Cal Berkeley and Cal Santa Barbara, which are not known to be bastions of conservatism, came out and did a survey of the United States. And they found out that just people voluntarily moving from the North and Northeast to the South had raised the longevity of the people on Earth by at least 3% and as much as 7%.
No kidding.
Just in the people that had moved to these, quote, hotter climates. And they live longer when they do that. So why are we worried about the temperature going up 2 degrees centigrade or 3 degrees Fahrenheit or something, when clearly we've got real evidence in front of us that people that move into these warmer climates live longer. People grow more crops because the growing season's longer. the people in the north would have longer growing seasons. As we all learned in the third grade, carbon dioxide is what plants eat. That's what our third grade teachers taught us, and I even remember that for some reason or other. But they are causing a tremendous increase in the growth of the different crops. The eight most consumed food crops on Earth, if we were to let the CO2 level build on up another 300 parts per million, we're breathing about 400 parts per million right now, there have been over 2,700 studies that have shown that the increase in those food crops would go up tremendously. In fact, there have been 579 on those eight crops alone. And it shows that they would increase their output of grain growth, et cetera, by 39.2% if we just let the CO2 level go up. Well, extrapolate that. If you're an environmentalist, don't you want robust habitats, ecosystems, things like that? Yes, that's exactly what would happen if we simply put more of this best airborne fertilizer there is, let it drift into the atmosphere, and let the good Earth's winds distribute it all over the globe. We know that it causes more food crop growth, more plant, forest growth. We now know from a NASA satellite that's been up since 1979, which is 35 years ago now, we know that one of the current NASA scientists said, hey, we've got a sensor on that satellite that will measure the greenness of the Earth. And he went back and looked at this and found out that the Earth, despite all the bad things we're doing to Earth, and we are doing a lot of bad things to Earth, that the Earth has been getting greener and greener and still greener now for the last three successive decades, despite us paving everything in sight with asphalt, concrete, putting buildings everywhere, and even clear-cutting a lot of the rainforest. Earth is greening because it's getting fertilized with carbon dioxide. So I hope you can see why it is just driving, we scientists that are really looking at the data on this, it's just driving us crazy to hear what garbage is coming out of people's mouth at the very top of our administration.
That's the true pollution.
Yeah, that's the hot air.
We'll just call
that is bad.
We'll just call that the real pollution. We need to, Mr. Stewart, we need to take a really quick break. We'll be right back. We're going to talk about climate stuff. Forgot to give out the phone number the first hour. I guess I assume everyone knows it. But it's 530-605-4567 here at KCNR 1460 AM. And you can reach us online at wethepeopleradio.us. Be right back.
KCNR, Shasta, Redding.
Hello, Frank Muse with Northern Lights Energy. Well, Christmas is coming next, so Kathy's got gift cards that you can get for the person that has everything. We have a whole bunch of new Toyo Tommy kerosene heaters in for Christmas and ready to go. Kurt and Ricky are delivering kerosene everywhere in the mountains. Cody and Gary are doing a lot in the plant, filling clear pearl for the portable heaters and propane bottles and bulk oil. And thank you to all the customers of ours that use the Muse card locks for trucks, cars, and equipment. Mike Alcorn, the driver of our shiny truck and trailer, has Driver of the Month award for cleanest truck. Robin is doing a great job keeping up with all of our ag customers and corning and deliveries. Joe at Weaverville plant is very busy filling propane bottles and kerosene. Northern Lights Energy, keeping families warm, tanks full, and always there before you need us. 241-2196. Thanks a lot.
Northern Lights Energy.
Our
culture of compassionate, patient-centered quality healthcare is our mission at Shasta Regional Medical Center. Providing superior clinical excellence across a wide array of specialties is why Shasta Regional is ranked as one of America's top 100 hospitals for the second year in a row and named again as a top 50 cardiovascular hospital. We are proud to be recognized as a leader for quality care and patient outcomes, and for our commitment to treating people well in our community. Taking a kinder, more gentle approach to wellness is an important part of healthcare. We strive to make minimally invasive diagnostic and treatment decisions whenever possible, helping patients receive the best care available, resulting in quicker recovery and a rapid return to normal activities. At Shasta Regional, our physicians, nurses, and staff emphasize treating the whole person and not simply the ailment, resulting in the highest level of care. We know medical care can change the body, but treating people well can change lives.
Founded in 1995, GI Pathology is the only physician-owned laboratory in the United States dedicated solely to the practice of gastrointestinal and liver pathology. The company provides the highest quality GI pathology diagnosis made exclusively by one of our fellowship-trained gastrointestinal and liver pathologists. GI Pathology delivers results to its Northern California client base within an industry-leading 24 hours. Call 888-2-GI-PATH or go to www.gipath.com for more information.
A reminder, you're listening to an encore presentation of We the People from December 7th of last year here on AM 1460 KCNR.
KCNR, 1460 AM, the most local programming in Northern California.
Kind of funny if we give out the phone number, people actually call.
Very scary.
It's super scary. So we heard from Lydia on the break. Bob talked to her. What'd she say, Bob?
She wanted to congratulate you and Bill on relaunching the program and say how much she and others in the Tea Party had missed you for the last few weeks, and super glad you're back on the air, on the radio.
Thanks a million, Lydia.
Yeah, thanks, Lydia.
So for those of you that missed the one time in the two-hour program, I give out the phone number. It's 530-605-4567, and I realize that was a little oversight on my part. Actually, on the website, I've got to get that stuff up and running, too. But most people are linking to us on the chat room, and it's right there on the top of your chat room window, actually. And you can also write to us in the chat room. We can take questions that way or comments, and, you know, sometimes there's goofing off that goes on in the chat room, and so we'll just have to get our flow back, you know, and get our plan. And if you've got ideas for shows or you've met interesting people or you want to hear the rest of some story, shoot that information my way or give them our phone number. It's all right there on the site, wethepeopleradio.us, and we'll get them on so we can hear about more. Bill, stop clicking your pen or you're fired and we will take your pen away from you.
Sorry.
I'm sure there's a scientific explanation for that.
Well, there is. You know, most of us self-proclaimed scientists click our pens.
Our pen clickers.
Our very big pen clickers.
Mr. Stewart, we're coming back to you. We're going nowhere good with this. Nothing good's going to happen now. Your last, I'm really glad we didn't... And I'm sure other people are happy, too, that we didn't interrupt your last segment, because that was an excellent soundbite on what the heck is wrong with this whole climate policy. But I have one piece of it that I want you to pull in. They're always talking about how if we increase, like, 1 degree, it raises the oceans some magical number, and I don't know what the numbers are. But we're all going to drown, bottom line. What's up with that?
Well, there are places on Earth where the sea level appears to be rising, and there are places on Earth it seems to be falling. That's why we look at satellite data, because satellite will measure the surface of the oceans worldwide, and it's not showing that the rate of sea level rise is increasing. The rate of rise for the last probably few hundred years has been about 7 inches a century. And it's because coming out of the last ice age,
17,000 years ago, the oceans are gradually still getting warmer than they were back in that last 85 or 90,000 years of cold spell known as the last ice age. So that's just thermal expansion. But we're not seeing any increase in that rate of sea level rise. So that is absolutely, it's just another lie of looking at data in a local area where the land may be sinking somewhat or it may be rising some, because if you're in northern New York where the ice was 2 miles thick during the last glacial cycle and that ice is not there any longer, the ground is gradually rebounding from having all that weight lifted off of it. And if that's right at the shoreline, it's going to cause it to look like a relative sea level rise or sea level fall, depending on whether the ground is rising or falling. That's why you need to look at the entire globe before you get all excited about this. Otherwise, you may just be looking at some local phenomena.
Yeah, you're kind of crushing my beliefs here, because I saw the video where the polar bear was on the little piece of ice that was...
Oh, yes.
It was the only ice left for the poor guy.
Was he drinking Coke, or was that a different...
No, he...
I know it, and it's too bad that he had that problem, because his brethren have been increasing in their population ever since.
That's the part that kind of blows the theory.
Dude.
Yeah, their population has increased, so apparently they're very good swimmers.
they are. And 100,000 years ago, during the last interglacial cycle, in which the temperature was warmer than it is now, and in which the sea level, I know the sea level was at least 19 feet higher in southern Florida, because I've been in a quarry down there that shows corals that are 19 feet higher than sea level right now, and those corals are 100,000 years old. So we do know that it was a warmer time then, a lot more of the ice melted on Earth, because it was. And they have found the jawbone now of a polar bear that was a polar bear. It wasn't some other kind of bear that ultimately became a polar bear only recently. Yeah. And so that shoots a lot of holes in their theory, because clearly there wasn't as much ice, but look, the polar bears made it.
Yeah, they sure did.
Cycles.
Go figure. So, yep. So all this hype about the greenhouse gas, like, what does that even mean?
Well, let me mention something, and I'm glad you brought it up that way. Carbon dioxide is a greenhouse gas. It does have the capacity to trap some heat that's being reflected from Earth's surface back into space. But that is very modest, and to the tune that it is having almost an insignificant impact compared to just natural phenomena, which are, I guess, driving the last 16 or 17 years of Earth not warming at all compared to CO2 level rise. So when they put out these surveys and say, do you think the Earth has been getting warmer? All of us say, yes, it's been getting somewhat warmer. It's been getting warmer for 300 years now, since the Little Ice Age back that ended in about the year 1715. And so we will all say, yes, Earth has been getting somewhat warmer. But the Industrial Revolution was only 150 years ago.
Exactly. So how do you explain that?
And so what made it warm for the first 150 years of that 300-year period, when CO2 levels were not rising?
It was the
when
Chinese.
When you look at real data, you can get real comfortable real fast that carbon dioxide has not been the major driver of climate change. And if it wasn't then, it's not going to be now, because the laws of physics aren't going to just flip overnight.
Yeah, even for the giant environmental lobby.
Right. But anyway, it is a greenhouse gas, so I always vote and say, yes, CO2 is a greenhouse gas. Can it cause the Earth to warm? Well, slightly.
Mm-hmm.
So I would have to say yes to that if I was just going to have a yes or no. I'd say CO2 can cause some warming. But as you mentioned earlier, would that warming be good or bad? Well, the statistics show it would be good. Common sense shows it would be good, because the times that mankind on Earth have flourished, like right now, is during these interglacial periods. And life flourished 100,000 years ago during the interglacial period. So these people that say more warming is just going to cook everything and everything's going to dry out, they're just saying a lot of things that in most instances aren't backed up by real facts. Having a big dry spell in California right now, but there are other parts of Earth that are having big floods all the time right now. So you have to look at
regional.
Global temperatures, global participation, global wildfires, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, before you come out with these big statements that says, oh, look, this is evidence that the world is getting hotter, getting drier, blah, blah, blah. You have to look at the whole globe. That's why we prefer to call it global climate change.
All right. See, all this stuff is just, it just irritates me. I want to know how we're going to get all these, get that voice out there and get some balance going on. We'll do that.
Well, let's talk a little bit about getting some objectivity into this and maybe some balance.
Let's do that.
Because all we hear out of the media are the catastrophic forecasts that are coming out of these unvalidated models.
Right. And the model
there
you can make,
group
say,
X. NASA scientists and a couple of astronauts that have been studying this now for going on 3 years intently. These are physicists, astrophysicists, geophysicists, geochemists, mathematicians, meteorologists, etc. They're not getting paid a penny for doing this. The nice thing is they're retired and they're not beholden to the current administration anymore, so they can say what the science is really showing them. The group they've put together to study this, and your listeners need to hear this, they're called the Right Climate Stuff. TheRightClimateStuff.com. Go to that website. A lot of these people are PhDs. They are most of them are the old Apollo bunch that put our people on the moon and brought them home and got all the other space station stuff started, et cetera. A bunch of brilliant people who are now putting their impeccable reputations at risk because they don't think that NASA and the United States government has the real data to back up what they're saying about carbon dioxide being the major cause of climate change. And in fact, we've had some letters written to NASA, with the most recent one within the last 10 days, challenging them again to come out with some real data. These guys from the old Apollo days said, we never put out a public announcement out of NASA without relating it to the real data that was behind it to back it up, and said, for some reason, NASA's not doing that anymore. And the best we can figure out is they don't have the data to back it up.
See
they
that?
They have all these model studies that the media loves to scare everybody to death with, and that the extremists love because they raise money that way.
Exactly. I love the here in the Right Climate Stuff, and that's attached on the web page for those of you that might be driving or something, don't have the ability to write it all down. We've got it on the show page, but therightclimatestuff.com, it says here, the motto of the Mission Evaluation Room engineers who supported flight operations was, in God we trust, all others bring data.
That's correct.
These were not only words that guided us during Apollo, but more importantly, words that defined how we did our work. It's what made us proud to be called astronauts and rocket scientists. We will attempt to adhere to these attitudes in order to achieve the goals of the study group. And it gives you all the credentials, aerospace engineer, NASA aerospace engineer, U.S. Air Force retired, Apollo Skylab, and the space shuttle. That's Jim Peacock, who's the webmaster there at the Right Climate Stuff. I hope you guys go on and look at that, because it's really, really interesting.
We gotta take
I'll
a break.
Do it. And if you want to look at some of the information for why I'm saying what I'm saying, I'm chairman of a nonprofit called PlantsNeedCO2.org. And you can go to my website and see a whole lot of charts and data that'll back up what I've been saying.
Hold on.
Okay. We've got to take a break.
I just wanted to say what these NASA guys found out, because it's real quick.
Okay, yeah, we'll pick that up right after the break.
Great.
Oh, yeah, we have plenty of time. We get to go to the top of the hour. Yeah. We've got minutes to...
Yeah, we got plenty of time. I want to talk about Interstellar. I saw that movie, and NASA never went to the moon. So
Trust me, can't explain it to him.
Okay.
We'll be right back in 2 minutes. The things you think will last just disappear. When you were ready to say, I do, somebody lowered the boom on you. And now you need a sympathetic ear. So tell me about it. Tell me about teardrops in the dark.
You're listening to We the People on Community Talk Radio for the North State, AM 1460, KCNR.
Who doesn't love Dickens' classic story, A Christmas Carol? Christmas isn't the same without its fascinating tale of spirits, adventure, greed, and of course, Ebenezer Scrooge.
Join us this holiday season for the Reading Civic Repertory's magical debut of Christmas Carol, A Love Story.
Fabiano Altamura's new adaptation will have it all, from gorgeous sets to spooky spirits and music that will have you dancing the humbug.
Will Ebenezer Scrooge get what he deserves, or will the miser choose a different path? Come and find out on December 19th and 20th at the Reading Civic Auditorium. Get tickets at the Reading Civic Auditorium's box office. Call 229-0022 or at readingcivic.com.
Brought to you by Meeks Lumber, Zimmer Construction, Hudson Entertainment, and Hilltop Medical Clinic. Don't miss this Christmas spectacular. Christmas Carol, A Love Story, December 19th and 20th, 2 p.m. and 7 p.m. at the Reading Civic Auditorium.
Dr. Marie Salas of Reading Republican Women Federated.
And I'm Ted Lighty. We would like to thank you for coming out to the Chris Perrano event last week.
Hey, Ted, you did a great job being our MC that night. Thank you.
You bet. Now it's time to thank our sponsors, Sierra Pacific Industries,
SJ Denim,
North Valley Distributing,
Foothill Distributing, Budweiser,
Healthwise Chiropractic, Dr. Maria Salas. Hey, that's you.
J&A Foods,
Premier Catering,
Northern Firearms Instruction. Hey, that's you, Ted.
KQMS,
Taylor Motors,
Adam McElvain,
Next Generation Real Estate Services, Jenny Mistel,
Best Western, Hilltop Inn,
Mike Pallmeyer, Edward Jones,
and of course, our great supporters, KCNR Free Fire Radio.
We would also like to thank our friends and neighbors of this amazing community who attended the event, and we would like to wish you a safe and happy holiday season.
It's Dandelion's first Christmas in their new home. So join the ladies at 1322 Pine Street. Enjoy the 17 themed trees, where you will find exciting brands like Brighton, Alex and Ani, beautiful sweaters, and delicious candles with scents like pumpkin spice and cinnamon cider. Have your sweetheart fill out a wish list to make your shopping easier, or have one of the many wonderful ladies help you with that special gift. It's Dandelion Unique Gifts and Clothing at 1322 Pine Street in beautiful downtown Reading.
National news with a local view. KCNR, 1460 AM.
Let me say now, I don't know. I don't know. I don't know where I'm going to go when the volcano blows.
Mr. Utley.
Nothing like a little I don't know calypso music. We are back with Leighton Steward. He is, he's been doing all sorts of stuff, and I do hope you check out all three of the websites, actually. TheRightClimateStuff.com, PlantsNeedCO2.org, and CO2isGreen.org. And there are a couple of cool videos, actually. I was going to say there's one, but there are two on the website. So, there you have it. In case we run out of time and didn't get to tell you all that good stuff, there's a neat time lapse of a plant. Of plants. One is in 450 parts per million, and the other one is in 1,270 parts per million, and that one grows, I don't know, Leighton, twice as fast, three times as fast?
Oh, gee, I don't think I remember off the top of my head the exact percentage. I may have that.
It's a pretty stunning visual.
Adding CO2 to the atmosphere and plants enhances plant growth. It would increase 170% if we had 2,100 parts per million in atmosphere. That's from a research study.
What was the CO2 levels back during the dinosaurs when the whole planet was green and everything was so big? I mean, was it much higher then?
Yeah, it was in the thousands of parts per million. 500 million years ago, which is when life really began on the land part of Earth. There had been life in the oceans prior to that. But the CO2 level was 7,000 parts per million. And then about 430 million years ago, the CO2 level was over 4,000 parts per million, and the Earth underwent a significant ice age, with ice coming down to about 60 degrees latitude at the pole. So CO2 clearly didn't heat the Earth so much that it couldn't have an ice age right in the middle of thousands of parts per million. This is what I'm talking about, going back and looking at real evidence. It's there for the taking, to go back and look at and then make some logical decision on it. And, of course, the only thing I can come out with is carbon dioxide is not the major driver of climate change. In fact, when you look at ice cores from both poles, they clearly show that carbon dioxide levels lag the temperature changes. Temperatures either get colder first going into an ice age or get warmer first coming out of an ice age, before the CO2 levels change. So that information is all real information. It's not coming out of an unvalidated computer model. Right. That's one beautiful thing about this bunch from NASA, is some of these guys really were experts in modeling and stuff, and they know that the models today just aren't any good. In fact, let me give you real quickly what the nine things they have come up with in the last 3 years, and compare it to what the government is saying to the public today. One, the science of the major cause of climate change is not settled. Natural processes dominate climate change. Man-made CO2 impact appears to be muted or very little. Real empirical evidence does not support catastrophic warming. The government is overreacting to concern about man-made warming. Catastrophic forecasts are coming from these unvalidated climate models. Climate models contain assumptions of Earth's sensitivity to CO2 that are far too high, that the EPA and administration called CO2 a pollutant is scientifically embarrassing, and finally, using the last 164 years of real temperature and CO2 data, the models run on that real data show that the maximum rise in temperature projects at only 1 degree Celsius change by the end of this century, not the up to 5 or 6 degrees that they sometimes bandy around. So that's what these guys are putting on the line. Now, talk about somebody that's got a good reputation. This is the team. And a couple of them are people that went in the sky. But this is the team that put the first humans on another heavenly body and brought them back. Whether it's 8,000 18,000, 80,000 years from now, these people will be known for being the first people to put humans out in space. And they're risking that reputation from all these people that say, oh, well, these guys don't know what they're talking about. They're not climate scientists. Of course, they're PhD astrophysicists and geochemists,
yeah,
et cetera.
Yeah, what do they know? What do they know?
When you tell them they're not smart enough to read a report, you've made a bad enemy.
Yeah.
No lie. Well, what about all this regulation? I mean, these guys are just... do we have to do another...
We need to sneak one more in here.
Yep, we need to sneak one more break in because we were... okay, I'm going to say we, but it was me. I was bad, and I didn't do the 131 correctly because we were yammering. So, anyway, one swift little break here, and then we'll be right back. Finish out top of the hour.
Well, I've got you. Karen from Washington State called and wanted to tell you and Bill how wonderful you are. And she's thrilled that the show is back on the air, and she's listening online at kcnr1460.com.
Nice.
Well, thank you, Karen.
Thank you.
Or perhaps she's listening on TuneIn.
You never know. You could listen however you can find us. Do it. We'll be back 2 minutes. You're listening to We the People Radio. Find us online, wethepeopleradio.us. I'd give you the phone number, but don't call us because we don't have time. We're going to let Mr. Stewart do all the talking. We'll be right back.
Are you interested in the future of REU, your community-owned electric?
You're listening to We the People Radio, an encore presentation from December 14th of last year on AM 1460, KCNR.
During the holiday season at Wellgate Sports Club, we want to give you the gift of health and fitness. Hi, I'm Rich Novelli, President and COO of Wellgate Sports Club. For a limited time, we are offering no dues until 2016. So call today at 768-1205 for your personal tour. At Wellgate Sports Club, you will experience exceptional every day. At Wellgate Sports Club, we wish all of you a happy and healthy holiday season.
It is that time of year again. Cooler weather, fun-filled festivities, warming up by the fireplace, and family get-togethers. Hi, this is Mark from Haven Humane Society wishing you happy holidays. As we go into the holidays this year, our goal is to find 300 forever homes for our homeless animals. What could be better than adding a new furry family member during the holidays? We have many wonderful dogs and cats looking for a home this holiday season. Please come by Haven Humane Society off 273 or visit our website at havenhumane.org. Like us on Facebook and follow all of the animals both available for adoption and adopted. For more information, call 241-1653. And from all of us at Haven, we wish you a happy holiday.
Kyle DeFore from Mighty Fine Foods in Bella Vista here. We'd like to thank our local community for making 2015 our best year yet. Your continued patronage supports 20 local jobs, and when you shop at Mighty Fine, your money stays in your community the way it should be. Daily deli specials under $5, a different hot soup served daily, groceries, meat, produce, and over 1,000 cold drinks. Mighty Fine Foods is your locally owned and operated neighborhood grocer. Mighty Fine, $2.99 in Deschutes in beautiful Bella Vista.
In the 40s, Redding Cab and Yellow Cab merged, and Redding Yellow Cab was born. A lot has changed since then. The town has more than tripled in size, and so have they. Through the decades, they've served Redding with generations of trustworthy drivers, family men and women, treating their customers with the respect and professionalism they'd expect for their own families. When you need to get to or from the airport or the train station, perhaps, Redding Yellow Cab is there for you. When you need a safe ride home, need to do some shopping, or want someone to shop for you, call Redding Yellow Cab at 222-1234.
For 45 years, the Redding Civic Auditorium has been an important resource in the North State for entertainment, fundraising events, trade shows, and conferences. In the past 3 years, over $1 million have been put back into this iconic structure. We invite you to be a part of the Civic's revitalization by becoming a member. We think you'll love the benefits, and your support will help to sustain its revitalization and strong community connection. Visit RedingCivic.com or the box office to become a Redding Civic member.
Uncle Bob, where did Mount Shasta spring water come from?
Well, you see, we get wrung out of the clouds as we pass over the top of Mount Shasta. Then we become part of huge glaciers. Then we flow through miles of volcanic rocks. Then we pop out of a spring at the base of Mount Shasta.
Uncle Bob, where did I come from?
You'll have to ask your parents about that one.
Pure and simple, naturally the best. Mount Shasta spring water.
For free delivery and setup, call 1-800-922-6227. Or go to MountShastaSpringWater.com.
Again, a reminder, you're listening to an encore presentation from December 7th of last year. This is We the People with hosts Aaron Ryan and Bill Cundiff here on AM 1460 KCNR.
KCNR, 1460 AM, the most local programming in Northern California.
Don't know what they're doing, but they laugh a lot behind the green door. Wish they'd let me in so I could find out what's behind the green door.
It's all our money. I know what's back there. tons of money that we're now not going to have because they're going to blow it on climate, whatever. So Mr. Stewart, what do you think about this whole treaty that they're trying to do and all that?
Well, I really don't think anything will come of it because the big guys, except for the United States, are just not going to agree to any kind of reduction in the carbon dioxide they're putting in the atmosphere and the cheap, reliable coal they're using, et cetera. I just don't think anything will come of it. That's my best guess. I obviously don't know, but that's my opinion.
Sure. How do we get all of us out here that actually still have not had our common sense removed? How do we help you in this effort? How do we help the scientists break through this silence?
Appeal. What I have found out, because this, I think this is the 82nd live radio interview I've done since January.
Oh,
I have, because climate science is very complex. It is difficult for the average American to get their arms around it. I have found out that going back to the third grade where we all learned that CO2 is what plants eat, and talking about that part of it to the true environmentalist out there, they can understand that, and then they can get comfortable about it. And then I beg them to go look at the real data behind all these claims that they're hearing in the media all the time. So that's how you can help. I mean, you're helping today by giving us an opportunity to say something, you know, to an audience out there, because we can't get anybody to debate us, really. They say, oh, well, we don't want to foul our eardrums by having you guys out and make all these statements. Thing is, we're just talking facts and they're talking fantasy when you get right down to it, because
sure,
that's what an unvalidated model is. So just keep it up. Tell the true environmentalists they've been had on this issue. Tell them, we beg them to go look at the real data, that these charges that get thrown around, if they look at the real data, are not, can't be substantiated. It's like the temperature is rising at an unprecedented rate. Well, clearly it wasn't even at an unprecedented rate in the 70s and 80s, because it was just as steep in the early 1900s. That CO2 is the dominant greenhouse gas is absolutely false. Water vapor is 8 times what CO2 is as a greenhouse gas, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I could go through the whole list of these, but I don't know how much time you have.
About 2 minutes.
Keep it up and start appealing to the true environmentalists, because most of us are environmentalists to one degree or another. I mean, yes, in fairness of full disclosure, I worked in the energy industry after I got my geology degree. But I also have an award from the Environmental Protection Agency for environmental excellence. The strange part here is that the fossil fuel companies are full of earth scientists. That's what we are. We studied the earth and its processes, and we can come closer to understanding this than certainly the average bear out there. And so many of my colleagues are really dedicated environmentalists, and I certainly consider myself one of those. But I also know we need to look at the facts. So just keep challenging the people out there to go look at the facts on this thing, and don't just automatically buy what they hear coming, you know, out of the radio or off
sure.
the television.
Well, you've got a book out there, Fire, Ice, and Paradise. That's also listed on our site.
It's a good primer for somebody.
Yeah, for us non-science
not
people.
Right.
Right
you,
on.
I mean, go to Amazon or you know, somewhere and pick it up. Fire, ice, and paradise.
Fire, ice, and paradise. Mr. Leighton Stewart, thank you so much for spending the afternoon with us.
Bless you folks for letting us come on.
Oh, absolutely. We'll do it again. You got
all
any
right.
Yeah, we like doing this. This is a good smartening up for all of us.
Yeah, it's great. It's great information.
And this has been We the People. We hope you enjoyed our encore from December 7th of last year. Aaron and Bill will be back live next Sunday here on AM 1460 KCNR Shasta Redding, where we invite you to stay tuned for Tom Gresham's Gun Talk.
News this hour from townhall.com. I'm Gordon Griffin. French President Francois Hollande is calling today's violent protest in Paris scandalous. He says that they were caused by disruptive elements that have nothing to do with environmental defenders, and they occurred at the square that served as a memorial for the 130 victims of the November 13 Paris attacks. Police used tear gas to stop groups of people throwing projectiles that included memorial candles. A few GOP presidential candidates have criticized frontrunner Donald Trump on the Sunday talk shows. One of those is Carly Fiorina. She says that there is a pattern to Donald Trump's statements.
He says something insulting, offensive, outrageous. The media pays attention. Then he claims we all misunderstood him. The media pays attention again. This is the pattern, perhaps, of an entertainer. It's certainly not the pattern of a leader.
Fiorina appeared this morning on Fox News Sunday. Student protests are about power, and now that leftists have it, what good to them is free speech?